Part 1. Gone. Fool, said I, you do not know silence like a cancer grows. Simon and Garfunkel, The Sound of Silence. Prologue. Failure wasn't a feeling. It was a taste in his mouth, an ache at the base of his neck. It was a frantic hum in his head. The reflection of failure resided in his wife's tight, fake smile when he came home at the end of the day. He felt the creeping grip of it in her cold embrace. She didn't even know the worst of it. No one did. But they could all smell it, couldn't they? It was like booze on his breath. Traffic on the highway stuttered. He tried to breathe through the trapped-in-a-box feeling that was expanding in his chest. That too familiar tightness of frustration. He looked around at his fellow commuters, wondering why none of them had taken to screaming or banging on their dashboards. How did they do it day after day, killing themselves for pointless jobs that ultimately lined someone else's pockets? Then they sat in an endless snaking line, only to get home to a ceaseless litany of needs. Why? Why did so many people live like this? This weekend is your very last chance to take advantage of the absolutely rock-bottom prices at Ed's Automart. No job, bad credit, nothing to trade in, no problem. We can help. Kevin Carr snapped off the radio. That schizophrenic rant of criticism and demands. Eat this, buy that. Need to lose weight? Whiten your teeth? Bacon double cheeseburger, personal trainer, foreclosure auction on Sunday. But the silence that followed was almost worse, because all he could hear then was the sound of his own thoughts, which sounded suspiciously like the radio, only there was no off button. Around him, the herd of commuters, some carpoolers but mostly solitary drivers like himself, gripped their wheels and stared ahead. No one looked happy, did they? People weren't singing along with the radio or smiling to themselves. Plenty of people were hands-free talking, gesticulating in their conversations as though there were someone sitting beside them. But they were alone. Did people look gray and angry? Did they seem unhealthy, dissatisfied? Or was he just projecting? Was he simply seeing in the world around him a portrait of his own inner life? He pulled into the right lane quickly, without signaling, cutting off some asshole in a late-model BMW. The other driver made a show of squealing his brakes and leaning on his horn. Kevin looked into the mirror to see the guy flipping him off. The man in the Beamer was yelling, even though he must have known that no one else could hear him. Kevin felt a rush of malicious glee. It was the first time he had smiled all day. The phone rang. He pressed the button on his steering wheel to answer, though he didn't like to take calls when he couldn't see the ID screen. He had so many balls in the air he could hardly keep track of them all. Kevin Carr, he answered. Hey. Paula. On your way home? Almost at the exit, he said. The baby needs diapers, and Cameron feels a little warm. Can you get some Motrin? Sure, he said. Anything else? I think that's it. I did manage to get us all to the grocery store today. He heard water running in the background, the clinking of dishes in the sink. And we got through it without a meltdown, if you could believe it. Cammy was such a good boy, but I forgot the diapers. He could see them there. Claire still in the baby carrier mounted on the cart, Cameron trailing behind Paula, pulling stuff off the shelves, clowning around. Paula was always together, with her hair brushed and her makeup done. She wasn't like the other mothers he had seen the few times he'd dropped Cameron off at preschool. Circles under their eyes, stains on their shirts, hair wild. He wouldn't allow that. Make a list next time, he said. In the silence that followed, he heard the baby start to mew. The sound of it, that wheedling little cry that would turn to screaming if someone didn't figure out what in the hell she wanted, made him cringe. It was an accusation.